Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
It's like a football play, right? The guard's got a block down here on the time, you know, on the linebacker. It was like a football play. So many things had to go right. And to see it work like that, we were speechless because we just couldn't believe what we'd seen.
Welcome to the MIP.
Welcome to the MIP. This week, folks, listen. Now, I know I usually start, we're going to give the MIP report and everything. But whenever you get an opportunity to sit in the presence of wisdom and brilliance and just partake in the crumbs that fall from his table, then, as my Bishop T.D. Jakes would always say, just shut up and listen. So I'm going to cut all of that out, man, and we're just going to chat with the legend, Michael Wilbon, right after I caught him and Stephen A. watching the Valley-Oop game and left them speechless. I wanted to get him on to relive that moment. But I also wanted to get his input and what he thought on many things. And we talked about everything. We talked about Aaron Rodgers, Ben Simmons, all of this foreign substance stuff in baseball. Certainly the Eastern Conference Final, and even his great friend who just won a major, Phil Mickelson. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. I appreciate the path in which this man has set. And many times I've sat with him, chat with him, shared with him, even dropped him some information to go on air with back in the days I was playing because I knew I could trust him. Everybody knows they can trust him. So I've had many moments of talking with him, but never an opportunity where others can peek in. And that's what the podcast gives us a chance to do. So with that, I'm going to just shut up and let you listen. Hey, joining the MIP, this man is, quite honestly, a living legend.
Don't say that now.
Yeah, yes, you are, Mike. I don't want to hear that, man. You're a living legend, man. Columnist from the Washington Post. You see him and invite him in your living room every day on Pardon the Interruption with his partner, Tony Kornheiser. Joining me, the legend, Michael Wilbon. Michael, man, thanks for taking the time to join me, buddy.
Anytime, man. I appreciate just being on with you, Michael.
I watched it the other night. That's why I had to get you. I had to call you right away. I watched it. I want to go there first. I watched it, and then I read it today when they tagged it, the Valley Oop. I was like, that's cool. I like the Valley Oop game. I like that right there. I saw you there. I saw you and Stephen A. speechless. I got to jump right to that right now, man. What was that atmosphere like? And now, context, put some context on it, Mike, because we've been locked away. Everybody's been hot. And now to be out and that thing in Phoenix looks so incredible. And then that game to go down like it went down. Talk to me about that scene, man.
Well, when you texted me today, I thought about, okay, I'm going to be talking to one of the people who actually knows what it feels like that when there's a play to win a important contest, something must go through you that is very few people have felt that. I mean, people can feel it in the crowd, but then what Ayton felt last night and what at times in your career, what you have felt. Now I've been at those games, some of them. And as a person who've been, Michael, I've been covering this stuff for 40 years.
40 years.
Very few things have I experienced watching like last night. And you can see, I know you've known the two of us half our lives, me and Stephen A., and you know we can't stay silent for that long. But when that ball was dumped through off that off that pass, I was saying to Stephen A. in the moment before, right? And we were screaming at each other. It was so loud after Paul George, and I feel for Paul. Missed those two free throws. I'm screaming to Stephen A., Ayton to the rim. Ayton to the rim. That's the only way they're going to win this game, because Booker wasn't shooting it. And you know, they were not having a great shooting night last night. I think the Suns were something like 5 for 23 on threes. They weren't hitting it. Ayton to the rim. But, you know, even as I'm saying it, Michael, I don't believe it's going to play out like that.
Right. Like
perfectly.
Right.
I mean, Jay Crowder has to throw the perfect pass. It just misses the backboard. And Devin Booker with a broken nose has to set a screen on a 240-pound dude. It's like a football play, right? The guard's got to block down here on the time, you know, on the linebacker. It was like a football play. So many things had to go right. And to see it work like that, we were speechless because we just couldn't believe what we'd seen. As many basketball games as we've covered between the two of us, and not just basketball games, great sporting events which have that ending. I didn't see that video until like noon today, and I saw it. And I was Stephen A. saw it. He's flying back over to L.A. already for tomorrow night's game. Right. And, man, I there are a few things in my life, Michael, that I have seen, and the noise there. That was like any noise in Madison Square Garden or old Boston Garden or old Chicago Stadium. You know, they don't make that kind of noise out west. They don't make that kind of noise in L.A. and Phoenix. They did last night. That was as joyous a noise as I've heard in an arena. And like you mentioned, we're coming back from a time. We've had 15, 18 months where you didn't have this sort of thing to celebrate in any community. And, yeah, man, I'm glad you tied those two things together, because you could feel all that last night.
You could feel it, man. I was like, hey, I felt it. I felt it watching. I was like, oh, my God. I got to call Mike right now. I got to take Mike. And then when I was texting earlier today about the game, about watching the Eastern Conference game, and I said, oh, my God, this is so great. And then somebody texted, they said, man, did you see the game last night? I said, absolutely. I said, I will have Wilmon on to explain it. It left him speechless. We got to talk about all of this, man.
I got to refer to something you said real quick. You talked about the young players before we went on, just on the edge.
Oh, my
you
God.
Talked about the young players. And, Michael, that's an incredibly important part of this. I ain't going to never say I don't miss LeBron. I mean, you always want to see all-time greats. But, Michael, these cats ain't waiting for the baton to be passed.
What?
They are snatching the baton. What?
I'm telling you.
Ain't they?
I'm telling you. I said, can you imagine what, like, Kawhi think? Kawhi said, I'm coming off Luka and going to a book. Devin, come on, man. Wait a minute. You know, it's insane what you talk about. Booker, Tatum, all of them. Mike, you were there. You saw the Chicago run. I mean, Michael Jordan was reigning king, and he's a bad man. And Mike, you talked about the 40 years. So we're going to stick on basketball, but I want to go everywhere with it. Okay. I can't have this kind of knowledge and experience on the MIP without trying to drain every bit out of it. And there's so much going on in sports right now. So, you know, so we got a lot to talk about. But, man, listen. When I see it, and when you saw in Chicago, and I watched Jordan and I loved him, and we were having a run that time. But I think now, Mike, to what we're talking about, Jordan was a bad man. But Jordan didn't have a whole bunch of bad people that were tantamount anywhere near his talent in the league at that time.
Right.
These young dudes now, it's like everybody got them some form of a Jordan on their team now. You know what I mean? Rather, it's the Donovan Mitchell, the Ja Morant, like we talked, Luka, or the Jason Tatum. These are all bad boys, man, and they are taking over this NBA and making it great.
Well, Michael, to that point, and, you know, yes, I was – you know, it's sort of like parallel lives where, you know, Jordan's run and your run. And I was – sports writers didn't cover one thing back in the day. We worked all year covering a bunch of stuff. And, you know, because I was in your locker room standing in front of you – on many Sundays, and I wasn't. But to your point, when I got ready to fill out, I'm a voter on the regular season NBA awards, and I got ready to fill out my ballot, Michael. And It used to be, I'm not going to say it was easy all the time. You felt like you might have left one guy off, right? Sometimes I would vote for a guy who was more senior status as a tiebreaker because this guy was going to get more years down the line. You know, you're trying to figure out what your tiebreaker is when guys are damn even, right? Michael, I got ready to vote, and I'm looking, and I don't have Bradley Beal's name down in the guards yet. He led the league in scoring, either him or Steph, the whole year. Then I'm thinking, okay, I got to put Bradley Beal in. I'm like, wait a minute. And one of the guys that I've gotten close to being here in Arizona, and I did a piece on him, and he's just so gracious and so great, is Devin Booker. Then I looked and I said, wait a minute, I ain't got Book on the second team. Who do I have on the third team? Well, how you going to leave out, you know, Kyrie, whose team finished with the number two seed in the East? How you going to leave him? The guards alone. Guards alone. So you only got space on the three teams for six guys. Chris Paul was on my team. He might not have been on some other people's teams. He was on my team. First team. He and Steph Curry were on my first team. Then I look around, Michael, six guards. I got 9 or 10 guards that I want to put on my, you know, first three all NBA teams. Couldn't do it. Donovan Mitchell. Then I started saying, okay, guys who are hurt, I got to leave them off. I got to have a method for separating. And you can't separate them because they're not separate. They're all great. And I was glad Luka could be voted on at the forward position, right? And so, you know, you get to that. And now I know what you mean. Michael wasn't trying to put together a super team because Scotty was drafted. He had to wait, and they came through together. Horace was drafted, and then Horace left, and they pulled Dennis. But teams didn't necessarily – you didn't have this many teams with this many guys. All you got to do is, like you said, look at the playoffs. I mean, you wouldn't have thought Atlanta 8 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago would have been in the conference finals. But they got shooters. They got dudes all over the court that can play. Red Velvet. I live 8 miles from the University of Maryland. I didn't know that kid was that good. And he's right down the street. So to speak to this, and, you know, I was thinking last night, I'm sitting with Mark Spears, and we're talking about the sports plural, right? And we're wondering about pro football and what we're going to see. You know, sometimes now you see guys come in who might be the 8th best tight end in the league. He might dominate for 4 or 5 weeks.
Right.
And I think it comes at a cost. I think people don't play one sport. They play one sport too much. Didn't you play everything growing up?
You played everything.
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 And I think that the injuries we see are contributed to by overworked muscles and people playing one sport all year long. But what it does, man, it gives you a lot of guys. It gives you a lot of guys who can play that particular sport.
And they get work early. Now, we played a number of sports, but we didn't have all the programs that these kids have now. You know, you get to dribble the ball up the court at 3 years old. I didn't get a chance to dribble the ball till I was 16 because they wouldn't let me. But you just get under the goal, get rebounds, to pass the ball. That's all you do. You can't dribble. You know,
I know. I used to play pickup ball at University of Maryland. There were plenty of guys who wound up playing, including Boomer Esiason, right?
Right.
Boomer wasn't shooting no threes. He was the biggest, strongest dude out there. He had to get rebounds. He had to get his butt under the basket. Boomer, get me the ball. You know, and now guys much bigger than you guys at 6'3 and 6'4.
They're dribbling up the floor.
Much bigger, man. It's crazy. I saw the film of Aaron Donald the other day. Aaron Donald can take a ball and go end to end, switch hands, and stuff it on you. And the athleticism, yes, when was he allowed to do that? Because I know, yes, I know you're telling the truth. You were not allowed to do that.
We weren't allowed to do it.
14.
We weren't allowed to do it. And I'm blowing what you talked about. And if you were 7 feet like Kevin Durant, boy, get under the goal, get your back to the basket. But now you're 7 feet dribbling the ball up the floor. It's phenomenal. And they are amazing, man. And I can't tell you, I'm enjoying it so much. Now, you told me you were there for the Valley. You watched that game. You watched that Eastern Conference first game. What were your thoughts about that game when you saw it? I said to this, Mike, I said, a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people giving Atlanta a shot like we talked about. Do you think Atlanta has a shot at winning this conference, winning this Eastern Conference?
Yes. And Michael, I picked Milwaukee. I mean, be honest about it. I picked Milwaukee to beat Brooklyn. They were going to get killed if Kyrie had stayed healthy.
Right.
But I picked Milwaukee, and I feel bad about all these injuries, as I said. But okay, once Kyrie got hurt, I thought, okay, Milwaukee is going to win this. They almost didn't. They still almost blew it. Atlanta can win this. Atlanta can represent the East. And I thought that going in. So tonight, you know, a lot of times I'm on some text back and forth with Charles. And I give Charles credit. Charles stuck with Milwaukee. And he said he thinks Milwaukee's going to win the whole thing. I give Charles credit for sticking with them, even though that team looks very flawed.
Right.
You know,
right.
And this goes back to something you and I believe. Okay, look, guys of a certain age and traditional roles in sports, we're going to believe a certain thing overwhelmingly. When you Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't want to see you out shooting threes, Michael.
Right.
You
right.
dominate the game from close to the basket. Not only do you dominate it with your skill and power and your height and size, you dominate it with passing. He's passing out of that. He's passing out of those double teams. But then they go back and they just start shooting threes. And I'm like, why is Milwaukee's making me crazy? I picked Milwaukee to beat Brooklyn. But, Michael, I find myself rooting for Atlanta. There's something about them. There's a charisma that reminds me cross sport,
right,
of when you guys were young, and you and Troy and that's Emmett.
The same thing.
And I remember, you know, people think because I lived in Washington and worked for the Washington Post, as you mentioned, I was a Redskins fan. I'm not. I'm from Chicago. I didn't really have a horse in that race, even though I covered and was close to a lot of guys like Daryl Green and, you know, and Brian Mitchell. I mean, I got close to those guys and still am over the years. Doc Walker. You know, all those guys. But, man, when y'all played those games and you guys were younger by a few years.
Right, right.
There was a belief in self that maybe, yeah, people had that about y'all after y'all had won. Y'all had it going in, right? Y'all just had it going in.
Right.
And nobody else necessarily believed. I'm watching Atlanta. Don't nobody believe, but them cats believe that – they're like, what? What are you talking about? Upset? What are you talking about?
Right.
Even though Milwaukee's got the experience, they've been disappointed twice, had their hearts broken. Man, I believe Atlanta now. I'll claim it. I picked Milwaukee. I believe Atlanta's the better, more together spirited team. And they play with a youthful exuberance and a spirit, but they ain't playing like they're young and stupid. They're not.
Right.
Those guys, man, Trae Young is an entertainer. I thought about this. You know, you guys, and particularly you were the entertainer
with some dog.
It's fun to watch, Michael. And so I'm like, you know what? I just texted a couple of my boys before we started. I said, look, y'all know I picked Milwaukee. I'm rooting for Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they can win this series. Especially now up and Milwaukee's been down in these. I was there at the series 2 years ago in Toronto when Milwaukee was up 2-0 in that series. And game three went to overtime. Toronto was dangling by a thread. And they came back and beat Milwaukee in that series. And so a lot of these things to me are driven by personality and intellect. Cross sport. You can just see these dudes over here, they believe – more firmly in what they're doing. And I ain't down in Atlanta. I know I picked Milwaukee, but I am not down in Atlanta.
And you said it all comes down to Trae Young, man. Wow, this dude off the, he's just on another level. And Mike, I'm watching. And I told you, I said, listen, he said, why are you liking that? I said, Trae gets the ball all the time. And it's not just his skill set. You alluded to it. He has a big old dog that bites down inside of him. I'm talking about it too. I went to that game in New York. I was at that game in New York.
Okay, when did you, knowing just the spirit of competition as you do, when in the season, what part of it did you look at Atlanta and say, all right, they got something special?
Right. You know what? Late in the season, when they took over, And you started seeing something. And I thought, whoa, they started coming on. They started coming. And you know what I thought about? I thought about, okay, he got his guy. When I see in Phoenix, when I see Chris Paul and Monty talking.
Yeah, yeah.
They, that's like those two head coaches, one just playing.
Michael,
That's one is just playing.
Exactly it, man. What they've done with Ayton, how they've developed Ayton.
Right.
All people got to do is go back to the end of last season. Ayton was like, he was a young pup. He had no bite to him. Now, look at the jump shot and now how willing he was to take that jumper last night over either Boogie Cousins or Zubac. He don't care. You people, wait till next year. Wait till training camp when Ayton comes back. He's going to be even a monster. But, okay, you the analogy you just drew, I couldn't see it with Atlanta.
And right. I see that with Atlanta too. That's what Nate and that's what Trey is, man. Them boys like, hey, those two head coaches and one just playing. You know what I mean?
You're right. You need that where that guy's an extension. And we knew Chris Paul. We knew that. But man, yeah. I ain't gonna lie. I didn't know Trey Young. I was one of those guys who thought he's too small. He gonna get pushed around. He don't ever get pushed around.
Yeah,
he doesn't. And he has that presence at 22 years old.
And he's developed the unstoppable. That teardrop pass, alley-oop, and then you do it. It's like an RPO on the football field. Whatever decision you make is the wrong decision, just take this, brother, because when he's hitting it, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful to watch, man. I really is. It's really beautiful to watch. Well, Mike, I told you I want to jump around here a little bit. We talked about that. We talked about the star. Like Trey, when he got to the free throw line, you know, I tweeted. I said, I guarantee you, he won't miss game winning free throws. You know what I'm saying? I should mess with PG, but I did. Those are game moments, and that's what I'm talking about. That dog, he's looking for that moment. He's like, wait a minute, back up. This is what I've been waiting on.
This moment. Yep.
He owns that.
When he took that bow. Is that the game you were at when he took the bow in Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, I was right. I was at the closeout game. The game they won, they closed it out. Okay. Yeah, I was right there. It was incredible. He looked at me. He was like,
yeah.
He was like, hey. Like you know, when you see him.
He knew somebody who had been there.
Right.
He knew.
That's exactly how I felt when he looked at me. I swear, man, that's exactly. He looked at me. He was on the floor and was at the free throw. He looked at me. He was like, legend. He's legend. And then he did this here. Like, you know, and I was like, oh, God. And that's when I kind of started easing towards him a little bit. Like, wait a minute. This boy has that thing. And you know, you see somebody like that in that moment. And I'm sure that's what he said. I'm going to have all that. That's how I felt he was saying. I'm going to have all that.
Because he was.
I'm going to get all of that.
And he recognized, you know, it's interesting because my flip around, my 180-degree turn on him was when there was actually in the last year when he was having some of those moments, Michael, where you knew he knew. And it doesn't come off as cocky. It comes off as, all right, I've got a skill set that I've brandished to be here. I'm not afraid of this moment. And like you said about the free throws at the end of the game, he ain't afraid of the moment. And he wasn't going to miss them. He was not going to miss some free throws. And so he identified what I'd like to, like, I don't know him to be able to listen to him. But I wonder who were the influences when he was little athletically. Because, you know, we had all kind of athletic influence. They crossed sport. They were all over the place. And one day I'll get to ask him, like, where did he get? How did this? Maybe it's his dad. You know, maybe it's a high school coach. You never know where that comes from. It's probably a Hall of Famer or two that he identified with when he was young, man. It's you're right. It's incredible to watch.
And it's a beautiful thing to watch. Now, I'm going to tell you, as beautiful as that is to watch, it's painful watching what Ben Simmons was going through.
Oh, man.
As a young man and you know, talented and gifted and accomplished so much. I don't know. What do you think happens with Ben Simmons now?
Well, you know, I've been asking players and former players mostly, again, cross sport. Because, you know, everybody's watching. The guys are – I got 10 years on plus on you, but the guys are in those generations, we're watching everything.
Watching everything.
I've been able to ask guys and two of the guys I really do want to ask, I wanted to hear from. I thought about this a couple of times. You and Dion, and you know, you guys grew up playing everything, and you were in these moments. And what, like, did you ever have fear? Because Ben is lavishly talented, obviously.
Right.
But Michael, when he was under the basket, at 6'10".
Yeah.
And he fast steps that shot because Trae Young, he thought Trae Young might foul him.
Right.
At that point, you know, and I don't know. I feel for him. I don't know Ben very well. I felt for him. Like, what happens? What is happening in our culture that somebody could be that talented? And by the way, for people who think he doesn't work all summer, hey, Mike, I know that's not true. I know Ben Simmons works. Because I've talked to guys who have played with him all summer as he works on his outside shooting. And then those same guys will tell me around September, they're like, yo, man, he won't even take shots in pickup games. I know those guys aren't making that up. They're seeing this struggle. They know how hard he worked for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And then he gets to that point, and I don't know. I just wonder what he is going to listen to. Like, if somebody goes to him and says, listen, let's talk to a sports psychologist. Is he going to see that as, no, that's showing my weakness? Or is he going to say, no, that's a sign of strength that I need to get better here. I need to. Guys like Jason Kidd, Irvin Johnson, these guys didn't shoot when they came in the league.
Right.
And they became all-time greats who could do everything by working their way through whatever issues. And they weren't, maybe they weren't psychological or emotional. God knows, Kidd and Magic are two of the strongest dudes I know. But I don't know, man. I just wonder, will he see help as a sign of weakness? I don't know him. But Michael, he can't do that. He's not going to be the player that we know he can be if help, coaching, repetition, unlocking these things are seen by him as a sign of weakness. I hope he doesn't do that.
Yeah, and what's scary to me, man, is like, and I'm going to tell you, confidence is a hell of a thing. You know what I mean? It's a hell of a thing, and it's the part that's scary to me. All those guys you mentioned, even back in the day, they can go silently work on their shot.
Yes.
Magic can silently work on a shot.
Yes.
Ben can't run with social media. So even when he tries to go work on his shot and grab confidence, he goes to pick up this and goes on social media, and they remind him he can't shoot.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? That's the part.
Reinforced. Let me ask you this.
If I was with him, I would tell him, we got to turn this off, brother. We got to put it down.
Was there a moment, was there a route? Was there a specific route? Was there a specific thing that ever got in your head when you were young? I can't imagine it because I've been watching you in person going back to freshman year to you. Did you ever have something, a route that when they threw it either in college or when Troy, that it got into you for a second?
And that's why, Mike, I'm telling you, and I've shared this before, that's why I know it's the psyche is so fragile. You know, I was telling you, when I first got to Dallas, man, I came in here bragging, telling my dog to catch a BB in the dark, told somebody to turn out the lights and shoot a BB gun, new sheriff in town. You know, I was talking all that. And I got that first training camp, man, and Everson Walls fake jammed me and then jammed me, and I was just blown because I've never had gotten jammed like that and everything. Right. Oh, my God. And every ball they threw to me for about the first 2 weeks, I dropped. I went in to see the eye doctor. I went to see the hand doctor. Wasn't nothing wrong with me. It was all in my head.
How did you get past it?
Right. I just said, Mikey, you got to come out here. That's it. I started checking the wind, going to practice, like, how strong is the wind blowing? Like, I was coming up, trying to figure out what I'm saying. I ain't never worried about this mess all my life, but it was in my head. Just for that little moment, it got in my head. And I got out of it, Mike. I said, you know what? I'm going to stay out here and catch pass. I'm going to drop this out of my mind. I remember running a slant route. I said, I don't care if you kill me right now. Somebody can knock me. I'm going to catch this ball. And that's how I broke it. I was ready to die for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I literally was ready to die for it. Like, I don't care what happened. I'm not taking my eyes off this ball. I'm going to catch this ball and get me back. And I got me back.
See, that's incredible. Let me tell you, if I ran into Ben Simmons, I would give him your number and say, call Michael Irvin, because people can listen and say, well, that was different. No. Mind, and we talk about mind over matter, and guys being able to do certain things. And it's probably in every profession, certainly the ones that have physicality more. Hey, man, I know guys in our profession, Michael, that I know they were better wordsmiths than me, But when the clock was ticking around midnight after a Monday night game, they were terrified. And they didn't want to write on deadline.
Right.
You know, you look at these things. It was, what, okay, did that person have the talent to do what we were? Yeah. But something popped up. I mean, I used to love to be at the fights when Mike Tyson was fighting, would knock somebody out at 11:18 p.m. I had till midnight. Nothing was in my head. Maybe I didn't have enough to be in my head. but fear gets you. And just, I don't want to see that, man.
Right.
But you're right. I think anybody who's done something tough can look at Ben Simmons and say, this is unfortunate because this young man has a ton of talent.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. And it's straight shoulders up. It has nothing to do shoulders down. Shoulders down has everything he needs. Shoulders up is an issue. And speaking of shoulders up, I want to move you around just a little bit.
Sure.
The situation going on in Green Bay. Let's step across this field. Mike, you do it all. You've done it all. You've been around it all. And I know you're Chicago. You're in Chicago. And I know you guys see that bad man twice a year for a long time in Aaron Rodgers.
Three times, Michael.
Right. You see him. Mike, will he play in Green Bay this season with what's going on in Green Bay?
So, you know, at the end of last season, Michael, and it's funny, I say this on the show, you know, I hate Green Bay. It's my birthright to hate the Packers. Aaron Rodgers has been my favorite quarterback for the last 10 years. He just is. And we've talked about it. And I see Aaron more during basketball season to talk to him because he's at the Packers. I mean, at the Bucks.
Right.
And he's also out at home, his home with the Warriors. So I see Aaron at basketball playoff games and I get to talk to him. And it's great because he's such a smart, insightful dude. And after after his coach kicked that field goal and didn't let Aaron Rodgers try to take that team down, then at that point, I said on Get Up the next morning to Greeny, I said, Greeny, I don't believe Aaron Rodgers is going to play for them again. And he's like, what? I said, okay, I'm going to make Greeny pull that film out, that tape. I didn't think he would because I thought he felt legitimately insulted that this dude – this rookie or not, was he a rookie coach in the second year? He comes in and he don't really understand what Aaron Rodgers has been. All right. Now I know, you know, Tom Brady is here. I get it. But in terms of if I was going to just select a quarterback to play with me, you know, at that point, and I thought he felt inside. I did not ask Aaron that. I haven't asked him. I haven't been on a golf course with him or anything with all this pandemic.
With Tom Brady on the other side too.
On the other side.
Right.
Michael. I'm thinking of all the great, great, great athletes that I know and put in this position. Am I going to take the ball out of a guy who is right now at the top of his craft, his profession? Am I going to take it out of his hand? No, I'm not. And so I thought then that he was going to leave. And I wasn't even talking about all this other stuff because I didn't know about that. I just thought Aaron Rodgers ain't going to want this. And so now, man, I don't know if I have an instinct is that he won't play with them. But I'll tell you what, Michael, I'm disappointed in the Packers in this way too. Look, I'm trying to look at it from both sides. So the Packers have done this once. The Packers went out and said to Brett Favre, thank you, you won. We're going to go younger. We got this Rodgers kid. And they made the right call. They didn't draft Jordan Love to see if he could play. You don't spend that pick to see if a dude can play. You feel you know he can play. So why the Packers not have any stones now? And say they can say to Aaron, we're going to trade you. Yeah, we're going to trade you to Denver. They could get so much stuff back and put Jordan Love out there. If they truly believe in their organization, their mechanism, the process to draft Jordan Love, then put his ass out there and stop whining. And by the way, Mark Murphy, the guy who is so central to all that as the executive, He was my AD at Northwestern. So I got total love for Mark, right? Now that he played for the, it wasn't a Washington football team, it was the Redskins. Mark Murphy was a starting safety for the Redskins. For the Washington Post. Mark Murphy's a really smart, really talented, really intuitive man. He didn't draft Jordan Love to see if he could play. So they doing this thing with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't understand. It's like, hey, God bless you. You had us competitive as hell, threatening to win the Super Bowl every year. But it's time to do what we're gonna do. They won't do that. And so I know it's a game of chicken. I know it is, Michael. It's like it's a game of chicken. But I don't know who I think will blink. I think Aaron may have to play this out, right? And maybe he gets a training camp and they do make a deal and they get a haul and they put people around Jordan Love. But, man, I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan. I admit to that. That's hard for a Bears fan to do. But I just think he may say, enough. Let me go somewhere and be where somebody's not going to take the ball out of my hands,
right?
With a season on the line, with a championship on the line. I can't wait to see how that's going to play out.
With the organization that believes in me and let me do it the way I want to do it. Like Tampa did for Tom Brady and everything. And that's what you're seeing. That blows my mind. Mike, you know what bothers me too out of all of it? And we mentioned it because it's the reality. It's the heat and the pressure that's put on Jordan Love now. That poor kid.
Yes.
Because even media, they want to kind of go at Green Bay. All right, you draft him. Let's play him. And we monitor him. He has a bad practice. Well, I heard Jordan Love was bad at practice.
Four interceptions, had a bad practice.
Right. Come on, man. Let's give this man a little room here. A little room. I mean, you know what I mean? I just hate seeing that.
I'm with you on that entirely. I heard that last week, and I was like, so what? If you ain't having a bad practice every now and then, you ain't trying. You ain't making no progress if you don't.
Right, but that's what I was saying, though, why it's so hard now. Like, okay, we heard two or three, five interceptions.
Yeah.
You never heard this junk about practice?
Never.
Like, wait a minute. Who's talking this stuff?
Not
right?
Only that, back in the day when sometimes, I mean, writers got to go to practice, especially if you knew the coach and you first of all, I remember going to different teams' practices. I remember coming out to Thousand Oaks and Jimmy sitting on the chair crossways and I would get to come into practice. I wasn't even going to write about what happened in practice. I mean, sometimes I wonder if people competed enough for anything to understand what practice really is.
Yeah, right.
I sound like Allen Iverson now. We talking about practice?
Right.
Practice.
I mean, and they were watching. They won't talk. Don't try. Hey, you can't write. Don't write about that. Don't write it in there. Only see that. Only in this shot. Right. It's different.
You are so right about that. I went in. I wanted to see sort of what people were doing, what it looked like, what the demeanor was. I wasn't about to write that somebody dropped four passes. If somebody dropped four passes on Sunday, then we can get into that.
Right.
Practice? I mean, you might have been trying something in practice. You might have been trying a different method, turn his hands out instead of in. I don't know. It's practice. And so now, the pressure, you're right. And social media, which I'm on social media. I have nearly 5 million Twitter followers. I can't act like I'm not a part of it. Well, Michael, some of this stuff ain't never going to make it to me posting anything because I don't believe that that's the most important thing I can do with my time or my sense of information, or if I'm talking to a coach who's letting me know, here's what we think is happening. There's a time to judge all of that. It's called Sunday in the NFL. It's game night at 7:30 tip off in the NBA. And so I got a feeling, my brother, that you and I are living in a world that the youngsters don't want to join us in.
Right. And when we bring it up, so I mean, come on with that old head stuff,
yes,
man. I get digging, man, because it is a lot of it going around. And speaking of old head stuff, I want to take you over to what's going on in baseball, because I watched this the other night with this foreign substance stuff.
Yeah.
Now, give me your thoughts on how this plays out. Now, here, Mike, what I say to this, which is hard for baseball, I believe. I wouldn't be talking about baseball any other time on this podcast. Besides, you got a problem? Now I got to talk about it. Right, you know what I mean?
It's a lot
we
of that.
Seem to bring it up. When something's going wrong in baseball, that's when we talk
about it. Because it always is going wrong, Michael. They can't get it right.
Yeah.
And baseball, I'm of an age where baseball is my first love. Yeah. it's funny. I tell people they want to know what we talk about in the green room or when we're spending Sunday together, like all those years with Magic Johnson and then Charles and I working on stuff. And I tell them, I'm like, yo, people our age, and Magic got the same age. Charles is like 3 years younger. Baseball was our first love, man. Baseball was first. And we sit around talking about baseball now. I mean, we will. Magic and I take the clicker on a Sunday in the NBA playoffs. And we, hold on, we got to check up on the Tigers and the White Sox, correct? Because that's what we grew up with. And Michael, it's sad because people have been trying to cheat. That's another one. I actually believe it. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And baseball always embraced that. Baseball has had people gooping up and scuffing up a baseball before throwing it from the pitcher's mound for 140 years. 140. Now all of a sudden baseball gets religion. And I understand they want the ball put in play more. They don't like this many 2-1 games. Too damn bad. First of all, 2-1 games are some of the most exciting games out there for the purists. They don't want the purists. They want to get people.
They were the casuals.
Yes. And so now we're going to – how are you going to accuse – and look, Joe Girardi's a Northwestern guy as I am. I'm predisposed to liking my man Joe Girardi, who I know and like. But I understand why a multiple Cy Young Award pitcher who's going to the Hall of Fame would come out and almost took his pants off yesterday so you could check it.
Right.
You know, and everything else. Michael, I think baseball's got it wrong. I think that they operated, they spent so much, they put so much effort into launch angle and people hitting the ball out of the ballpark. The guys forgot how to hit the ball, keep the ball in play, how to get on base and be moved around the bases with a bunt and a stolen base and a sacrifice fly. They can't do that. Now they want to blame all the pitchers and say, we've never seen spin rate like this. I don't know about spin rate. I was a pitcher. I grew up pitching till I was 17. Hmm. And I doctored the ball. Hell yeah. My 13-year-old son asked me last week, Dad, you pitched. Did you do some of this stuff? Hell yeah, I did it. Right. And the pitchers I grew up idolizing, my idols, Michael, they did it. And if you went to the ballpark and waited in the pitch in the parking lot and got your favorite pitcher, he would help you figure out how to do it. That's the history of baseball. And now they want to act like this is new. Ain't nothing about this new. I'm with you. So the game's taking longer, right? Because you're investigating the pitcher three times in the inning. I don't know, man. I don't know what baseball is going to do, but as an institution, they seem to get it wrong all the time. The games are slower. The balls are not being put into play any more than we saw a month ago. At least those are the latest numbers I'd seen. I don't know what they're going to do, man, but I don't think you can bring young people into the tent when this is your primary focus.
And they want those home runs. You know,
they do. They can say whatever they want, but they do want that.
They want a home run. Everything's about that long ball. That NBA about that three ball, home run. We want to see it. It's exciting. It that's what it is now. You know what I mean? Speaking of that home run, I know you got you consider him a great friend. Phil Mickelson got that won that major at the age of 50, man. What'd you think when you saw that?
I'm always rooting for old guys anyway at this point because that means I've known these guys for a long time. And Phil, you know, Michael, we had an actual conversation here. You mentioned home, and yes, you know, Arizona is Phil's second home after San Diego where he won. Where he played in Torrey Pines League. This is his second home. I live around the corner from his first design, his first golf course design, and I root for Phil. And we were talking about something at a Suns game a few years ago. Maybe he was 45 or 46, and I just said to him, what goes first? And he said, I'll never forget this. He said, can you do things on a deadline? Can you do things as easily, as quickly, as instinctively as you did 20 years ago? I'm like, no. He said, that's it. It's not physical either, is it? I said, no, it's not. And he said, you know, it's concentration. He said, can you concentrate like you did 25 years ago? No. And Phil, you know, and so we heard him talk about that stuff again, right? 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago when he talked about trying to keep his focus. And you can see him closing his eyes and envisioning. I don't know that I remember Phil doing that 25 years ago. I don't think so. But, man, he was able to keep his concentration for 72 holes. And I cheered like hell for that. And I remember the conversation, you know, and I, Michael, like last night was very easy because of the way that game ended. For me to keep my concentration all night from pregame, right, through the game, right, through the post game, right, with Scott Van Pelt and Stephen A. It was because it wasn't hard. And I've been thinking about this with this series. And so the series continues tomorrow night in LA. And it's like, okay, am I going to be able to hold that concentration, not just hold it, but really just zero in on whatever happens tomorrow night in the same way? And I hope so. I swear I want to. I want to be able to do that. Can I do that every night for the rest of the playoffs? Playoffs go another month. The playoffs, if they go to game 7 of the finals, go to July 22nd. Am I going to be able to do that? I sure hope to God I can. But I have so much admiration for Phil and athletes, period, as they get older, because I understand what he was talking about. I buy into what he's talking about. That ability to focus and keep your mind, because you can't think about your kids and whether my kid did okay in practice today. Phil wouldn't think about that 35 years ago. You know, he was not 35, but 30. He had no kids. And so now, am I going to be worried about my kid and what his practice was like, or am I going to be speechless with Stephen A. again, making y'all laugh?
I'm telling you, man. It was, and I even saw what feels like. I don't even want to see the scoreboard. I don't want to put no more.
Wasn't that interesting?
No pressure. I don't want to put any added pressure on my head. I just want to focus on this little spot right here. And then focus on that little spot. I thought that was amazing.
Brilliant. I think part of it, to realize it is one thing, and then to do something about it. Right. Like a lot of times we realize that we can't do a certain thing anymore. We doubt ourselves. Man, he realized it and he did something about it. I totally admiration for that.
It's the last thing for a guy to get an understanding of. And I use it all the time, Mike. And I know I'm taking a lot of time. Just a few more things. But I say it all the time. I say, hey, man, you can't put brain equity on everything. You only have so much. Especially as you say, as we get older and older, you have to make sure you get delegating those things, getting rid of them, and putting that brain equity where it's most important and most needed. And Phil certainly did that and did what he needed to do. Speaking of brain equity, the brain trust over there with the Chicago Bears. I went through this ride now, and I saw it, you know, it was so interesting. At one moment, they thought, We got the man coming over here. Seattle finna send Russell Wilson over here. And they didn't get Russell Wilson. I know. They did Deshaun Watson coming over here. Oh, he didn't get Deshaun Watson. You know. Are you joking? Y'all giving us Andy Dalton? I was like, this is going to be interesting to watch this whole thing. You went from Russell, you know, the great young kid, and now Andy Dalton, they went crazy in Chicago.
Yes.
But then they bless you with Justin Fields.
Yeah.
How do you see this thing playing with Chicago, man? How long do you think it will take before Justin Fields is on the football field?
So, Michael, it's funny. In my house, you know, my 13-year-old, who plays point guard and quarterback. That's what he plays in his life and his teams now, right? 13. And all he cares, so he's never lived in Chicago a day in his life, but dad has lived in Chicago. And those are the games I take him to, not to the Washington football team. So he's grown up since 3 years old, you know, with Devin Hester and all that. He's grown up a Bears fan.
Oh, yeah.
And so we live and die that way. I think he may have met Jim McMahon out here in the desert once. Look, Michael, I've been following the Bears since I was 5 years old when they won a championship in 1963. Not the Super Bowl, but a championship. And in that time, so that's, what is that? Damn, that's way too close to 60 years. That's 58 years. In 58 years, the Bears have had one quarterback that mattered. Jim McMahon. Oh, man. That's it. How you gonna have one franchise quarterback in 58 years, okay? True story. So when all that stuff, when they passed on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson in the same day, that sent me into depression. I've been in depression for the 4 years about that team. And it's not even Trubisky's fault as much. He was put in a situation which was unwinnable.
Unwinnable.
He shouldn't have been selected ahead of those guys.
Right.
But okay, so now they go in and try to make all these things. We're going to get, you know, my man to back up from Philly. And it's just a disaster. So I give Ryan Pace, the GM, who I've been crushing for years, I give him all the credit in the world. Now, they were going to lose their jobs, Michael. Make no mistake. Everybody in Chicago knows it. It's open. Open. It's not a secret. Everybody knows. Those guys are going to lose their jobs. They didn't get a quarterback and get back on the winning track. And I give him credit for being bold and moving up and getting Justin Fields. The only caution, and that's I'm a Big Ten guy. You know, we lost our championship game just now to Justin Fields. That was, you know, and that was a game which took his draft stock down. My Northwestern Wildcats before he bounced back in that Clemson game. And I hope that this young man is up for this. We're not Philly, Washington, New York. He's not going to get booed. There's not going to be short patience.
Right.
I mentioned my son at the beginning of this answer because he started already. Dad, what week are we going to our first Bears game? How long before Justin Fields is on the field?
Yeah.
I said, Matthew, I'm going to go week 4, you know, and he's like, I want to go to the opener. I'm like, let's not get crazy. But it's that kind of frenzy, Michael. You know what I mean? It's like people, you can be 60 years old. You've seen one franchise quarterback.
That's incredible.
Okay.
That's incredible.
So now everybody's saying, when do we put him in? That's a lot of pressure. He seems to be up to it right now. Like all his answers, his demeanor, all of that seems to be up to it. But man, that's a lot, right? I'm glad. I hope they start Andy Dalton. I hope the transition is reasonable and not insane. I haven't talked to Jim McMahon about this. Jim just has one of the great football minds of anybody I've ever known. Like there were some guys the Bears have drafted or picked up or traded for, and Jim would be like, bruh, no, this is not happening. So don't get crazy. He just has one of those minds. He just has that. I haven't asked him about this, even though he's out here in Arizona too. But Justin Fields, the thing I worry about is, and you know this, having played big-time college quarterback, when have you ever seen a great quarterback from Ohio State?
Yeah.
It ain't happened. The only franchise, the only institution with a worse quarterback track than the Chicago Bears are the Ohio State Buckeyes.
In the NFL, you mean?
I'm talking about those two franchises are the worst. The Buckeyes ain't never had no great quarterback. Never.
But they win, though. They win in Ohio State.
Michael, they do, but you know, you had more great quarterbacks throwing the ball to you at the U than Ohio State has had in 50 years. Now, I'm saying all that, hoping for this dude. I'm in it. I believe in him. I'm going to support him. I done bought two of his jerseys to get my son already. I'm totally down with Justin Fields. But, Michael, it's been a long time, bro.
It is time.
It's time for us to
see something happen.
Do you want him to start week one?
I want him to start soon, but week one is a whole different beast. You know what I mean? I don't mind Andy Dalton probably starting the first quarter of the season because sometimes expectations are going to be high.
Okay, I feel vindicated now. I said 4 weeks, okay?
Yeah, let him start the first quarter and get a kid some time to see real live action. It's difficult seeing.
Right,
real live action. You give them 4 game films to see real coverages, not this little vanilla stuff they play in the preseason before they start all these crazy designs. Let them see something for real. And then I would start working them in. Even if Andy's playing pretty good in the first 4 weeks, I'm still going to work it. I will still start working in packages because I know Andy ain't going to play good the whole season.
I just know that.
I mean, you're in Dallas.
Just watching it.
I saw him in Dallas. I mean, he's a good dude, all that. But that's the way I would look at that. Mike, I appreciate you taking time, man. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you one last thing. I know you've had some great times, man. I admire him, and I hear so many people talking about Devin Booker and comparing him to Kobe Bryant. And I wanted you to tell me a great Kobe Bryant story. But, Mike, I also want to hear what would you call, out of all those 40 years of covering sports on every level, covering it everywhere and covering across all sports, what would you call your greatest moment that you witnessed in sports?
Okay.
I thought about when I was watching you the other night, I was like, man, what would he call his greatest moment?
Well, you know, it's going to be a weird one. I actually have one. But let me tell you about real quick about Devin Booker. So I sat with Devin multiple times. We were doing this piece, cover story. People can still find it. It ran in February on ESPN. And Michael, Kobe is a massive influence on Devin, personally. Not like seeing him on TV.
Right, right.
At the end of Kobe's career, I think the game was here in Phoenix. And early, at rookie year in Devin's career, he and Kobe had a conversation. Kobe called him over and talked to him. And he told him, dare to be legendary. And Devin got that tattooed on his forearm. Be legendary. And Kobe wasn't talking about scoring 70 points, although Devin's already done that.
Yeah.
He was talking about the little things it takes to be a professional. You know, and all of the details and the stick-to-itiveness and the resourcefulness. And Devin has talked to me about that stuff, and it's amazing. And, you know, Kobe's death and the anniversary of it this past January were particularly difficult. It's been difficult for a lot of people, difficult for everybody. But he had a personal relationship. And there are certain nights where Kobe would text Devin and had a message for him that night. Like, you know, if Kobe was playing somewhere and watched him play, or Kobe then in retirement when he's doing his storytelling life that was already worthy of Academy Award, Kobe would text Devin and offer, you know, and you know some of it was tough love. You know some of it was. I'm scared of the comparisons. Maybe I'm being too protective. That's hard. That's hard. Like when you were young and as great as you became, a Hall of Famer, one of the great people of all time in the NFL, I wouldn't say, yeah, he's going to be just like Jerry Rice. I mean, that's not fair to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's plenty of room for greatness. So Stephen A. and I went at this a little last night because Stephen sees certain things that Devin has borrowed from Kobe, and he has.
Right.
He called him the second coming. I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Like, I think Devin Booker is going to be a first-team All-NBA player multiple times in this next, you know, he's 24, next 7-8 years. But, man, I don't want to put that weight on him. And I think he's got his own – I know he's got his own personality. It's going to be different than Kobe's, even though they both grew up with a dad who played mostly overseas. There are lots of similarities. But I think as we watch these playoffs unfold, these and the next few, we're going to see a great player in Devin Booker. I'm really scared of that comparison. I'm just scared of it. I just think there's room to be great without having to be a copy. And the other thing, man, all these years, I just sound old now. 40 years. But Michael, you know what? Actually, what I was going to say was my answer when you first asked me. I'm going to give a real true answer. The ability to be behind the curtain, right? That press pass is access to being behind the curtain. If you use it right, if the people that you are trying to get to tell their stories to you trust you, right? The highlight really came 3 weeks ago when I was entered into the Basketball Hall of Fame. And I'm giving that speech. And I look down after the speech and people are applauding and standing. And the people applauding and standing include Julius Erving. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was one of the first relationships I was afraid to develop was when Tony Kornheiser, who grew up with Julius, they grew up in Long Island playing against each other and all that. I once asked Doc, Doc, was Tony any kind of player? And Doc said, Tony wasn't bad. I was like, oh, no, I can't hear that. I can't hear that Tony wasn't bad. But Julius is out there and Magic and Charles and Shaq and Bill Russell. I mean, like that's beyond. I'm not ready for that, right? And somebody, I think it was Alex English, come on, man, you belong. I'm like, no, I don't. I appreciate this. I'm humbled by this, humbled in a way that I may never be humbled again. It's just the honor of a lifetime. So to be with those guys and having had them trust me enough, Charles trusted me enough to write, to edit his two books, two bestsellers. That's a hell of a lot of trust, right?
Right.
all that time with the Cowboys, when you would trust me at your locker to say, hold on, when everybody leaves here, I'm going to tell you some stuff. For you to trust me like that, I mean, that's you know, I had for Michael Jordan to do that, for Kobe, for people, that folks who don't know their names, assistant coaches and dudes who tape ankles and, you know, for people to do that over a long period of time, guys like Isaiah Thomas and Doc Rivers, who we all grew up in Chicago at the same time, and they've won major championships, and to trust me to tell their stories now, even. And they might get mad at me for something I said in a moment, but for people of that ilk, championship ilk, all-time ilk, to trust me to tell their stories and complex stuff. And I know there are times we've been at a hotel and you come over and grab me and say, hey, listen, there's something you need to know. That's an honor, right? Because sometimes it'll be about an assistant coach who needs to get an ear, right? Or somebody who needs to be looked at to be hired, or somebody who got wrong. For you to tell me that, I take that seriously. And I don't take myself seriously, but I have to take information and people who give it to you because they care about a person or a story or an effort or somebody who got wronged. That's as important as it can be to me. So that's why I say to you, when you say, hey, do you got time? I'm like, okay, shut up. What are you talking about? Because I appreciate the years. Man, Dion might say to me, hey, listen, hey, this is not getting the attention it needs to get over here. Why don't you just look at it? If you believe right. that I know what I'm talking about, why don't you look at this? You know I'm going to do that. I owe y'all that. I owe you that for the years and years and years and years of conversation and information. And so, yeah, man, there's games and there's people and there's interviews and there's all of that. There's Olympic competition where I've been brought to tears by things that people did when they finished in last place. Mm. And their parent came out and helped them around the track. Tears. And I'm proud to have been at them. But I think the main thing is that after 40 years of this, people still trust me to get it right, tell their stories, maybe tell somebody else's story. Right. And that's the lifeline of this. That's the lifeblood of this. And I pick up the phone sometimes and I'll say, hey, if I'm wrong on this, tell me. And I appreciate when y'all say, I don't know, man. Think about this. It needs to be considered this way. And I think that's the most important thing at this point that I could do. And I was glad that my son saw me communicate with those men and women who are the best at what they do. So it's an honor still to be on whenever you tell me I need you to do this. It's an honor. That's always, I told Tony, and I said, yo, man, I'm going on with Michael. So go take your old ass to bed.
You go get you some rest, too. I know you got to get up and go work. But that's I appreciate right, you taking the time, man. Mike, man, listen, man. And Mike, we've always shared with you, because honestly, every man is looking for a place that he can go and he knows he'll be treated just. Be treated just. Just treat it right. I'm not telling you to treat everybody the same way. I'm telling you to right. treat this with what it deserves. Treat it just. And you've always done that. You've right. always done it. And that I appreciate you. You know, I think about the story where you're talking to Kobe, talking to Devin Booker. And I was like, man, just the crumbs from that Kobe table is what we're seeing right now yes. in this playoffs.
Yes, we are.
The crumbs. That yes. Kobe has given him to eat on, we're seeing in his playoffs. Yeah. Mike, you've given a lot of us that are in this business those crumbs too. And okay. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me. I'm going to go out with this one last thing. I remember fairly late in your career, and we were talking about one of the things you'd be doing next. And I said, yeah. Mike, you don't need no advice. You're going to be great at this. That. You're a great listener. You're curious. You're going to be fine at this. I'm pretty sure that conversation was in Washington. And so whenever it is, wherever I hear you, if I don't hear you and I hear something from the internet, I'm beaming, brother. I'm proud of this second career that you're having. And so you can't go nowhere. We need you. So you ain't gonna let that we grabbing on with you like a cornerback grabbing you, trying to keep you from the pylon. You ain't going nowhere because we need you. And thank you. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you, brother. Love you, man.
Love you too. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Be good.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com. Today. That's Geico.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. And welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. The most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight. This is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy. It's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us. We don't do interviews. We do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill. We drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
What's better than courtside seats? Free sports on Pluto TV. Hey, sports fans, get all your sports free on Pluto TV. Pluto TV is your home for sports. Watch 24/7 channels of MLB, MLS, MMA, sports news and analysis, plus documentaries, TV shows, and movies, all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts, ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.